Hey Wargamers, welcome back to the channel, Death From Above Wargaming. I'm Aaron, and I'm here with Tom and Dave. It's another wonderful Sunday morning as we approach the springtime. Actually, we're approaching the summertime. We're well into the spring at this point. April 21st, Tom. April 21st. Wonderful day. So anyway, today we're talking about 3D printing again. It was so controversial and so juicy that we decided to do yet another episode on it. In fact, I was explicitly told to walk away from the topic. So I didn't. We decided to do part two. So we're going to start out with a little comment of the month, my favorite. We don't do these very often.
You are so mean.
In fact, we had so many great comments. And as Tom and I like to say a lot, thank you so much for the engagement. But there were two particular comments that I wanted to I wanted to bubble to the top, if you will. The first one is from a gentleman named Padre Speaks. I assume it's a gentleman as his name is Padre Speaks, but sorry if I got that wrong. So he says, someone gave me a TLDR of this video and it verges on a boomer take with hardly any knowledge of 3D printing. Stick to what you know. Speak to more people who print the models and their customers before releasing something like this. So, like, that's a fair point, except for you didn't even watch the video. But I will say he did eventually watch the video. He didn't change his opinion, but thanks for the view and thanks for the interaction. I appreciate it. So the other comment, Tom, is from Mr. Beeps, one of our favorites.
Wait, we're just not gonna go through that comment one by one. We're just gonna
let it fly. I just want everybody to know that if you enjoy this episode, you can thank Padre Speaks because he was the guy that told me never to talk about this again and inspired me to do part two. So, like I said, the comments are great and I appreciate them. And everybody is entitled to their opinion, but I'm entitled not to like them. But this comment from Mr. Beeps I really liked. He said, I see today's 3D printing advocates a lot like the Linux proponents of the early 2000s. You can view them however you want. Visionaries, radicals, pioneers, or trend chasers. But get on my level, boys. I'm sculpting life-size Toms out of butter so I can use the HOV lane.
Yeah. Perfect. I got that framed on my wall now.
It's so good.
It's one of my favorite comments of all time.
Fantastic.
Like, just imagine like the butter kind of melting and he's constantly like trying to smack it back into shape as he's like driving. Like, you know.
Just like sculpting your nose in real time.
Yeah, it just keeps like falling. It's
too good. Oh my god, it's so good. Thank you, Mr. Beeps, and thank you, Padre Speaks. Hey, that rhymes. I'm a poet. I didn't even know
Mr.
it.
Mr. Beeps.
So listen, so many people got all flustered about this 3D printing thing. We're going to talk about it in detail.
Just totally misunderstood,
much like the last one about gatekeepers. Dare I even say that out loud? It's just like,
you should not have said that word.
Shouldn't have said it. But listen, guys, like, this is great. We're engaging you in conversation, but I'm going to do something even better this time. I am throwing down the gauntlet. There's an open challenge. All right. So many of you were like, no way, man. My 3D printer's the coolest thing and I can print the best models. That's indestructible. I dare you. Ship it to me. I'm going to smash it on camera. And if it survives, you get $100 Amazon gift card. It's going to happen.
What?
If you're interested, Aaron@DFAWargaming.com. I will send you the studio's mailing address. Send it. If we get a whole bunch of them, we'll do a big video. I will smash them live on camera. But before we do that, I'm going to prime them and I'm going to slap them with a little speed paint, Tom, and we can see just how high quality these models really are. All right?
Do we have to smash them?
Oh, I'm going to smash them.
Good.
Then they get a $100 gift card. It's just that simple. Put your money where your mouth is. Ship us one of your finest models. All right? I expect you to use the finest dental plaster or whatever the hell it is that you use to print indestructible models.
Resin, right?
I want to see it. All right.
We also want to know what resin you use.
Absolutely. So when you email me, I will send you. I want to know the printer. I want to know the resin. I want to know it all. So we're going to do it. We'll do a whole video on it, and we're going to see how good it is. Now, let's get into our ready room roundtable. All right, this is where the rubber meets the road. So again, Dave is an avid 3D printer. Actually, does a ton of 3D printing for the channel and painting as well. He just actually printed some excellent stuff from Thunderhead Studios, and has some models that he printed up for me as well. So Dave knows a thing or two about printing, unlike me. I'm just a silly boomer who knows nothing. But a couple of things that I want to bring up before we really get into the discussion. Remember, the intent of the last video was really to talk about whether or not 3D printing was a threat to Catalyst Game Labs. All right, so we're going to talk a little bit about that. But really, I want to dig into some of the comments that were made. Again, there were so many comments, so much engagement, so many good ones. There's a couple of big, though, like things we need to pull apart. I think there was a lot of conversation, a lot of ideas that were conflated, and I want to make sure we pull those apart. So the first one is this. You know, printing for home is, right, it could be done by anybody that is just, hey, I bought a $100 printer on Amazon, to some guy who, you know, again, left a really good comment, but he was citing his, you know, $12K, $850 printer that takes up 60% of his basement. Like, there's a difference there. Like, you're more than a hobbyist. You're like an enthusiast. You're very deep in the weeds, you know, if you're running like these high intensity printers. And, you know, to me, and Dave, I'm interested in your perspective, and Tom will go to you. To me, like, that's like saying, hey, cars don't really do well over 110 miles an hour. And then Tom freaking out and citing his, you know, his Lamborghini, because it does great over 110 miles an hour. Like, cool, but how many people really have that? So, again, educate Boomer Aaron. Help me understand. Dave, what do you think in terms of, you know, the hobbyist, the average consumer, so on and so forth?
So, I would consider myself a hobbyist when it comes to 3D printing, and I'm able to turn out some very passable, you know, models, terrain, what have you. I don't have a crazy printer. I have a budget resin printer. I've tuned it. I'm, you know, into thousands of models printed. Awesome. But that being said,
so when
I don't
you say
have a
tuning,
crazy
what does that mean?
Setting exposure times, making sure that you're using the right resin, making sure that you're printing, you know, at appropriate temperatures. You know, you're not trying to do it in a cold ass garage in the middle of winter. It's really just
what about like modding? Like, I was gonna say, I see people like changing the print bed material and like adding different like metal pieces and upgrading their machines. Is that different from tuning? Because like for the car world, you know,
right? You're thinking a lot about FDM rather than resin. When it comes to resin, there's very few mods that I'm aware of that you can make to printers. Sure, there's you know, you're changing your film, which is just recommended no matter which resin printer you're doing, but that's a, you know, $5 to $10 change. Nice. Other than that, it's just the print material.
Now what? Okay. Yeah. So when print material is the resin.
Correct.
Okay. Is there a huge range of resins in terms of like price points, or are they more like applications? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is it like,
so
one's 100, one's 10, or are they all about 10, but it's like,
no,
do you use the right one?
It's you use the right one for the right application. So different resins are formulated to do different things. Some are very bendy. Some are very brittle. Some, you know, ranging in price. I was just shopping today. You can get a kilogram of resin for $17.99, but you can go much more expensive, you know, pushing closer to 50, 60 bucks for the same amount.
Now, if you wanted to buy like a dime bag of resin from a street dealer, what would that be? No, I'm kidding.
Like, if I want an eight ball,
I mean,
of
you're
resin,
charging
like
a premium.
What?
Yep. Yeah.
So really, so if I could summarize from like, again, my like, yeah, I don't really know perspective, not understanding like using the right resins is like a rookie mistake that leads to bad prints. Not having the environment set up correctly.
It does.
Also, yeah, like you just set the thing in the room. You don't even think about the environment, and you're getting middling.
Right.
But if you take some time, like how close do you think you can get to like production quality versus like amateur quality with like the machine you have?
Relatively quickly. The community is out there, and they're very, very helpful with getting stuff dialed in. There's even test prints that help you configure your printer.
And that points you to like what the mistakes are. Is that kind of
absolutely
like,
yep,
depending on what happens? That's cool. And
correct.
Now, I don't know if you, I don't want to jump forward, but what about the software? Because I remember that also being kind of tricky. Like, what software you use? Is that pretty much easy these days?
It's pretty standardized at this point. Okay. When you buy a printer, it comes with a recommended slicer. And again, if you just for some reason hate it completely, there are alternates out there. Most are free.
Yeah.
But like, so it's pretty easy. And then like an STL file is readable by any of them. There's no compatibility issues. Like, awesome. So
nope. Yeah. And there's, you know, entire libraries and stores available online that are just aggregators for those STLs. Whether it's Thingiverse, My Mini Factory, Cults is one that I use.
Do we have to bleep all those names out? Are we going to get in trouble? Beep. Now the last part is the difference between like FDM and resin. Like how big of a gap is it between those style of like filament printers versus resin?
When it comes to detail, in my opinion, there's a pretty large gap. And that's really down to the resolution that the printer is able to handle. When you're using a resin, you're much more finely detailed. You can get much sharper prints. Using an FDM or a filament printer is ideal for things like terrain. Yeah, but bigger things, less detail. You're going to see some terrain on the channel that's FDM printed.
Right.
But the very first step that I did with it, and I know it's not the most recommended. I hate sanding, so instead I'd use automotive filler primer to smooth out my layer lines up from my FDM.
I just bought a ton of that for 3D printed terrain. Rust-Oleum mm-hmm. makes a really good like filler primer.
Fills it in really well.
Yep. Yeah, and you're supposed to hit it. Thunderhead recommends, actually on their site they talk about it. I think they said 3 coats usually does the trick, and you don't have to sand at that point. I mean, you might if you're a perfectionist, but largely that will cover most of the imperfections. Yeah.
Sure.
And now, and the resin printers work with a laser, right? Is that the laser's heating the resin in specific pinpoints, or is it using UV light or something? How is this?
UV light. Yes, you got it. So if you remember, you know, since we're boomers, if you remember DLP televisions, where it shines a light onto a mirror, the mirror reflects through an LCD screen. Mm-hmm. So the LCD screen goes black.
That's right.
Where it can't show the light. And then anywhere where the UV light is reflected up into the resin, it cures those areas, which is how you get your individual layers.
Very cool. That's awesome. That's very cool. We're,
and so the whole time the print bed's moving up so that the laser is shining on the same layer, but the piece is actually moving. Is that right?
Yeah.
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay.
The print bed actually goes up and down, and it will come down and meet the film at the bottom. It will shine the light for a few seconds, then it will move, reset, shine the light again, and cure the next layer.
That's cool. Very cool. That's really cool. So like all of this stuff is great information. And I loved what you said about, you know, the sort of the community out there, right? That's willing to support and ready to support, right?
Oh, it's,
new printers,
it's
like
incredible.
New hobbyists, if you will. That's a really cool thing. And I think this is a good segue into, you know, one of those conflated issues, right? Well, sort of a dividing line for me, which is I'm printing for myself and you know, and my buddies maybe, right? And I think that's okay. To me, you know, that's a lot like cardboard standees or using proxies, right? And then on the other side of that is like, I print to sell. Now, there's a whole IP thing in there. Sometimes it's okay, sometimes it's not, and we're not even really going to go into that. But when we talked about crap prints and Tom and I's experience, and I'll be honest with you, between the last video and this one, I ordered 3 off of Etsy from 3 different vendors, and they were all absolute junk. So I stand by my boomer comment of what I said. Most of the eBay prints, most of the Etsy prints are junk. And connecting the dots between what you just said, Dave, they're not spending the money on expensive resin.
Right.
They're not taking the time to print it out. They are min-maxing their profits, right? And it's junk, period. Deal with it, people. Now, I also cited in the last episode, Sage Print Labs, fantastic. Mm. Okay, fantastic models. They actually use high quality resin. We've reviewed them on the channel. They're absolutely tremendous. So there are vendors out there, yes, but there are few and far between. In fact, Sage Print is the only one. Polygon was very good, but again, they're not around anymore. But Sage Print is the only one that I've tried. Tom, and you remember, you were like trying to break it on the channel, I think in the review, and we couldn't break it. So they're out there, but 80% stink, period. This is the stuff you buy on Etsy and eBay. If you're printing at home, I think it's very different. So I think that's an important thing. And I'm putting a line in the sand there. If you disagree with me, you can email me and point me to an Etsy or eBay vendor that actually sells good 3D printed models, because I have not found one.
Yeah, and I mean, and that just goes to sort of more of the point of that, is that within the entire marketplace, if you can't just pick a vendor and get a decent print, if you have to like really search for one or two out of 10 or 20 that are good,
right?
That doesn't, you know, that's a problem for the consumer, right? So there's all these different facets of this. Yeah.
Unrelated to the breakability or whatever, the quality of the resin, the scale sucks. It's like no different than buying from, you know, dare I say, Ironwind. You don't really know what the scale is going to be when you buy one of those models. And so it's not different to me. The thing that I love about the Catalyst Minis, and yes, they have mold lines. Yes, some of them are melty and aren't perfect, right? But they're all the same scale. They're all the same design aesthetic. Like, you know what you're going to get, and that's what I like. And I think there's a large community of players within BattleTech that just want to go to a store and buy something, right? And know what they're going to get, to your point, Tom. Not like, oh, is this print going to actually be garbage or not, right? And I think that's largely what we were talking about, us boomers, we were talking about in the last one, is the stuff you buy, not the at-home hobbyist, right?
Yeah. Well, and then there was that was part of it, right? We sort of got into, is that a model for Catalyst to sell STLs directly, which...
Oh, man, people love that idea. The Hero Forge model?
It would be fantastic. Spectacular.
Yeah.
I'm a full supporter of that idea.
It'd be awesome, right? Yeah, and then... So good. A lot of people brought up some like IP issues, right? Different rights that I guess Topps wasn't interested in talking about. I don't know. Again, it's all gossip, right? We love to gossip.
I mean, there was Rem had mentioned it in her interview with Sarna that Topps didn't want to have the conversation, but what that could mean one of about 12 billion different things, right? Maybe it's not good time. Maybe they just don't want to have
the
conversation.
It wasn't a serious conversation. Yeah.
Maybe because they just have this plastic line, they don't want to introduce complexity. Who knows what it actually means? I don't think it's off the table. I just think right now it's not something that they're interested in. But a comment somebody made about proxy models is that many of the source books reference proxy models, right? Proxy models have been in play for a very long time. We have cardboard standees. We have little, you know, chips with mech faces on them, like... That genie can't be put in the bottle, was what the quote said. And I thought that one stuck with me. That's not going away. And we need to embrace it. And I think we need to welcome it. And here's why. Several of our friends in the international community, they made a great point about mechs not being available, right? Just Catalyst products not being available in their country, period, right? And I'm sure, you know, whether there's shipping issues or logistics, or maybe there's just not high volume, whatever it might be, there's definitely, you know, our friends abroad that don't have the same access that we have here in the U.S., right? And do we exclude them from, you know, are they not welcome to the party, right? Like, what do we do about that? So that's the topic I want to talk about next. Just spend a couple of minutes. Tom, let's start with you, and then Dave, you can weigh in on that one.
Yeah, so the one point to that I would make is, so I think Catalyst did try to straddle that fence a bit, where they said, like, hey, in our official channels, we don't want that kind of content. But they never said that they don't, like, they're not going to go after people 3D printing their own minis that post, like, they're, it's almost like fan art, right? And I really think there's a big place for that. Like Dave, how much would you say a print cost you? Like, you've already invested in the machine for 1,000 other reasons. You want to print a BattleTech mini. How much would it cost you? A couple cents? A dollar?
Yeah, a quarter.
There you go. So like if you draw your own mini, maybe it's not perfect, whatever, but like you put blocks together in a 3D modeler and you print out a little blocky mech, like great. And you call it a battle master, right? To play at home games. You're not trying to sell it on Etsy, anything like that. There's not a world where I don't understand that as completely fair use, right?
Yeah, honestly, it's unfortunate that, you know, people overseas do not have the widespread distribution that we see here. You know, any of the Barnes & Noble exclusives, like, they just can't get them. I think it is a massive you know, feather in the hat of CGL that you've got people who are passionate enough about the game that they're seeking out alternates to get, you know, the little miniatures that they love. That only furthers the game as a whole.
Right.
I wish, you know, that they could, you know, walk into a store and buy it the same as, you know, us here in the US. Mm-hmm. And I buy a lot too. Like I own everything that Catalyst has put out as far as a miniature. Now if I didn't even have that as an output, then 3D printing would be the only way that I could be able to do this. So
that's right.
I think it's impossible to stop at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. And you know, I have mixed feelings about the sort of official channel thing. I mean, I guess I definitely understand, like, hey, we want to push our own product. This is our Catalyst Game Labs channel. We only want to see our products, you know, in here. But I do think that is a little bit of a slippery slope. And I'm just to be clear, like, I'm not unsupportive of them saying that, but I do think it is a bit of a slippery slope where, you know, like if you remember with Games Workshop, it was like if it was like somebody else's terrain in the picture, like when Pegasus or whatever that company was had those goofy like knockoff 40K, right? Like, where do you draw that line? And I don't want to see BattleTech, and I think a lot of people don't want to see BattleTech become like an over policed franchise, right? And I think there's sort of like a chain reaction of freaking out.
Yeah, that's where it comes from,
right?
Sure. Yeah.
All right. So one other final use case that I think, you know, several people brought this one up. I call it the Pouncer Battlemaster use case because they're mechs that you can only get in the box set right now. Okay, the Pouncer comes in the, you know, $80 or $70 Alpha Strike box set, and the Battlemaster comes in the Game of Armored Combat. You can't get them anywhere else right now. I have all my mechs, you know, I'm going to a tournament or whatever. My stuff's already painted. I have my Capellans. I really want a Battlemaster. Like, what do I do? Do I go buy a $60 box set for one mech and throw out the rest? Or, like, I know you can buy the reinforcements thing. It's $40 and you just get the mechs. But, like, should I have to do that? Or, you know, is it easier for me to just rip out a 3D print of a Battlemaster for a quarter, right, and call it a day? So, I don't know. Let's Dave, let's start with you. I think I know what your opinion is on this. But, you know, what do you think about that?
Of course you do. honestly, you need one mech. You don't need 8 mechs or 12 mechs.
Right.
I'm completely okay with it. I'm still playing the game. You know, I'm still enjoying it. You know, not everybody has an extra $80 to throw down on buying a new set. Right. I mean, buying a printer and getting the stuff for it is an investment for sure. You know, it's not cheap. But as I said, you know, ripping off a Battlemaster is a quarter. It's not, it certainly wouldn't break the bank. And I'm not trying to take anything away from Catalyst. As I said, I buy all of their models that come out. But there are definitely gaps in the model range.
Yeah. Tom, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't even know. I have no problem with it.
Well, why don't we segue into our patron Q&A here? Because this is actually a relevant Q&A, and I think you're going to answer the Q&A question with what you're about to say, because I'm reading your mind right now. So this patron Q&A.
Say what?
This is from Rugged Finn, and he says, how would you, if given full control, make individual mechs available to be bought outside of force packs, or worse yet, the box sets? I need several Thunderbolts and Phoenix Hawks, he says. So, Tom, I mean, what do you think about that? Like, how could we? So, I would solve this Battlemaster Pouncer problem differently. Like, if I were Catalyst, like, I would solve it by making it available, right? Like, what would you do? How would you make it available?
Okay, so yes, this kind of goes into. It's funny. I'm gonna twist it in my way because what I was thinking about was the unavailable mechs, the mechs that don't exist anywhere yet.
Yeah.
And a big delay in getting a new mech to market is in the production logistics. I think their 3D prints, or I'm sorry, their 3D models could be done months ahead of when a mini could actually be produced, right? Which says to me, you know, when you're talking about individual mechs, a great model would be the Hero Forge. I mean, it was the the point I made.
I knew it.
It's just, I mean, they could even, honestly, if they don't even want to release them, that wasn't even the point I was making about like STLs to consumers. I was saying they have a website, they print it themselves, and then they package it up and ship it out. That'd be perfect. Right.
Like a 5 week lead time or like a 4 week lead time on a made to order Mac.
Yeah.
And you ship it out in a little salvage box to me.
They get a premium price for that. And then the second tier of that would be once those 3D prints are available on this design website would be, you know, packaged minis like Reaper minis or something like that, right? Like you can buy, and D&D does it too. D&D has individual mech, you know.
The interesting thing is the 3D models for these mechs are done. Like those are the renders that we see. All they would need to do is make those available and charge a premium. Like I will pay you, charge me $15 for an STL of a Battlemaster. I think what's scary about that is once they release the official STL, there are going to be Etsy stores that pop up selling quote unquote official. I think that's a valid use case to not release them, but the Hero Forge idea really, especially printing them in-house and custom shipping them, it would make a ton of money.
And again, and I don't want to make the point, I mean, off camera we were talking, and I will gently make this point too, is that there's such a focus on eco-friendly manufacturing and consumerism that, you know, the need to produce giant boxes, ship them across the world, you know, it's not necessary anymore. It's really a financial and a logistics decision that people make and how they want to run their business. And again, it's fine. I have no problem with it. But, you know, it's just another sort of, you know, if you care about that stuff, that should factor into these decisions in some way. So,
yeah, it's
and China is not it. No, China as a manufacturer is not it.
No, I mean, it's another contra. Do we have to do another? We'll have to do another jump point on that because that's going to, it's going to torpedo the comments section, but it's a great, it's an excellent point.
Somebody spiked my seltzer. No, I'm kidding.
It's just a valid point. Like, I mean, I didn't even really think about, like, and I was talking about what do I do with the other, you know, seven mechs? Do I throw them out? But think about, like, all the money involved in the packaging, the shipping, the, you know, the back and forth from China. Like, there's a lot of money that went into getting that thing to your doorstep just for a single mech when you can press print, right, and rip one of these things off in about, you know, how long does it take, Dave?
Three and a half hours on my printer.
Amazon can't even compete with that.
Yeah.
Same day shipping.
Not yet.
How about we get off the soapbox and we get into the render blender? All right. So I got a good one here for you tonight.
Is this a solar powered blender?
It's a blender powered by all of my leftover boxes that I composted.
you're like burning them in a pit. Yeah, it's good.
It's not a coal-fired power plant. It's a catalyst box-fired power plant. All right, so check it out. Speaking of power, we're looking at the Blood Asp. Now, this is coming out in the new Kickstarter, all right?
Yep.
And this is like a salvage box one. It doesn't come in any lance or anything like that, right? Dave, I'm pretty sure this is just like an individual that is produced.
Buy a Blood Asp.
Yep. So I'm going to bring this guy up full screen, Tom, all right? I got three renders. Courtesy of our friend Anthony Scroggins, it's a Shimmering Sword on Patreon. If you want to get access to all of these awesome things here, all right. Yeah, so Tom, take it away. What do you think, Thomas?
This is one of the nastiest looking mechs I think he has, or Catalyst has produced, I should say. Great job on this with those two like shoulder mounted like. Oh my God, what are they? What is the armament on this thing? Is this an assault mech or not?
It is 90 ton Clan Omni mech.
Can I see some more pictures of this thing? Wow. Oh, and I was saying too, you know, at first I didn't think its head was mid mounted. I thought it had like a cool Cyclops head.
Like up here.
But I think is that the medium pulse laser?
So I think it's two heavy lasers and a pulse in the arm. The Gauss.
I thought
it had six
heavies.
It's got four heavies.
Oh, okay. I thought it had six. Okay.
Yeah, four heavy mediums and two medium pulse. I think they're all in the arms. I'd have to look.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Specifically.
Then. Dude, I love the foot. I think that's the first time I've seen like a bear claw style foot. That's super cool.
Yeah.
Like, and it really looks like articulated. Like, it looks like the two outer claws can move independently. Like, very nice sculpting there. Very nice design. The location of that streak SRM6 is so cool. I could imagine almost like a Voltron where the head like pops up and like shows it, you know, or it has like a sweet, maybe it has like a sweet cod piece that opens up, you know, it's like, wow.
Oh my God. What was that? That's like, what that's probably what this is right here.
Yeah. Who's the guy from Dusk Till Dawn? Sex Machine, right? Tom Savini, when he's got the belt thing that pops open with the gun. No, I don't. Okay. Mm-hmm. It looks awesome. Yeah. You guys know what I'm talking about, right? Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Oh my God. I love this. Like, I don't know what this is supposed to be, but it almost looks like a mount adjustment like for the Gauss rifles. Yeah, like a ratcheting
exactly
adjustment.
Yeah. It's really cool. What's the next? Do we have another picture of its butt? Oh, yeah. Oh, it's kind of a flat butt. It's kind of a, you know, Karen butt. I don't know about that. I do like that you can see that he put the Urban Mech on the upper back. You see it right there? Yeah. I feel like he puts an Easter egg of Urban Mechs into all of his designs now.
Deploys an Urban Mech. Like if you press this button, it just bounces out. It's like Shockwave from Transformers when Ravage would come out of his chest and Buzzsaw.
Yep, yep.
Yeah.
Oh, or like
it's how you eject.
Could you imagine? Oh, that's so cool. Yeah, man, this is a knockout of the park. I can't wait to paint this thing either. Like, it looks so good.
Yeah, man.
And when are
we getting
this? Is this in the Kickstarter? Or
it is. Yeah, it's in the Kickstarter. And it's funny, like, your reaction to this is, like, spot on to mine. It's just so badass. There's really no jokes you can really make about it, minus the cod piece.
Is there an old IWM version?
I don't know that there is, to be quite honest. I'd have to go on their website and look, but... I think this might be a brand new sculpt, but then again,
nope, there is one. Wait, you gotta
look at that. Oh my God.
Now that's much closer to the new sculpt, right? It's the armament's the same, the weapon placements and everything.
I mean, it looks ridiculous.
It still has the
look how narrow its hips are. Like if you compare this to the new design, it's a very good, there's some homage points to it, right?
You can see the Gauss rifles, they have these little things, right?
Yeah, because I was going to say, like, when I first looked at it, I was like, this feels like a departure from a lot of other designs. Like, the size of the guns on its shoulders are almost cartoonish compared to some of the more realistic Battletech designs. Mm-hmm. But I also love having a couple of them. Like, I think of the Nightstar and stuff, those other kind of almost cartoonishly villainous, like,
villainous.
Boss man. Yeah, I love
it. It's a great
like
word
he doesn't look like a good guy, right? And his name's Bloodass. It looks like a bad mech. Yeah.
It's going to be a bad guy. It's Smoke Jaguar, I think. I'm going to paint it in Smoke Jaguar colors.
They're always bad guys, no offense.
Always the bad guys.
To my clan brethren, but
that said, we're going to wrap up this episode. So, as always, please leave your comments. Let us know what you think about all of this 3D printing hubbub. And tell me if you're interested in joining our challenge. All right. I'm dead serious. $100 Amazon gift card to the winner. Yeah. If it paints nice and I can't smash it, you win. All right.
Okay. If you don't want your mini smashed, email Tom at DFA Wargaming.
No, I'm smashing it. I mean, I'm going to have the goggles on and we're going to have a hammer and we are going to smash them on camera.
But here's my question. Wouldn't the catalyst injection mold it?
Oh, we'll test one of those too.
Okay, there we go.
All right,
yeah, we'll do that.
I got 42,000 executioners in salvage boxes. They're just waiting to be smashed. I'm going to make a plug for Ares Games and Minis. If you do want to get minis, dice, fantastic 3D printed terrain, anything along those lines to fuel your Battletech addiction, head on over to Ares Games and Minis. Also, if you liked what you heard, you can subscribe, you can like, and as we said, please leave a comment. Even if it's nasty, I love reading them. And lastly, if you want to help out the channel and keep the lights on, you can head on over to Patreon. It's as little as $1 a month to get in on the action. And thank you to all of our fantastic patrons out there. Without you guys, we wouldn't be doing it. So thank you very much. That said, I'm all done. Guys, go out there, enjoy some sunshine on this wonderful Sunday. Thank you so much for watching, and of course, stay tuned. Always great stuff coming from Death From Above Wargaming. Have a good one.